Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Wrestling Changed My Life podcast. It's your host, Ryan Warner. Our guest today is Matt Hickey, Chief Revenue Officer at Securidae. He grew up wrestling on Long Island, went to Hofstra, wrestling under Tom Ryan, graduated from NC State, then got into the tech sales world. He was Chief Revenue Officer at CloudGenix before they were sold to Palo Alto Networks, and now he's crushing it at Securidae. Can't wait for this interview. Hope you enjoy it, folks. Fan of the week goes to our friend Tom Betts, who reached out over email to let me know how much he enjoyed the show, as well as to fill me in on a pretty cool guest who is an All-American at Tennessee. Tom, thanks so much for listening. We greatly appreciate it. And folks, this episode is brought to you by our partner, Beat the Streets National. Go to national.beatthestreets.org. to donate to the Gear Up campaign. They have different packages on how you can support a little wrestler in need with shorts, t-shirts, headgear, shoes. It's the Beat the Streets National Gear Up campaign. Go to national.beatthestreets.org. And without further ado, folks, let's give it up for Matt Hickey.
We can endure anything and adapt and pivot and change. Wrestling gave us that ability.
I would say nothing in life has impacted me more than the things wrestling has taught me in terms of self-reflection, resilience.
Toughness. Some guys have it, some guys don't.
Adversity, 100%. How to pick myself up and be a man after I failed.
And everything that has shaped my life and where I'm at today would not be there without the values and basically the lessons I've learned through the sport of wrestling.
For me, wrestling saved my life because it allowed me to focus and channel my energy.
We're fortunate if you wrestled, because if you wrestled, natural talent helps, but it's 5% of the ingredient. It pales in comparison to heart and technique and effort.
It humbled me, taught me humility. Nothing can humble you more than wrestling.
I think it's the learning to adapt, right? You learn how to adapt, you learn how to solve problems.
You know, if I look back at my time, that's good wrestling. If it gave me one thing more than anything else, it's mental toughness.
Matt Hickey, welcome to the Wrestling Changed My Life podcast. Pleased to have you.
Oh, man, I am excited to be here. Wrestling and business, two of my favorite things to talk about.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, you have a son that just won a state title. You're in business. You're in sales, more specifically IT sales, so we know we're going to get into that, but let's just start at the beginning, man. I know in the past you said you come from a family of wrestlers. What was your childhood like? Where'd you grow up, and what was the household like?
So I grew up in Long Island, New York, in Suffolk County, about an hour and a half outside of Manhattan, and I grew up the youngest of five brothers, and no sisters. My mom was kind of the ref in the house because we all wrestled. We grew up in very much a blue-collar family. And we really transitioned probably when I was about 15, 16 years old. My dad transitioned from blue collar on the press printing to a sales job. And he kind of opened the eyes to the whole family as, holy cow, we can take this blue collar work ethic. For him, it came from actual blue collar. For us, mostly it came from the work ethic that we learned in wrestling and the discipline and all those great things that, you know, we all know and love, and apply that to the business world and have some great results. So that's exactly what we did. And, you know, my oldest brother, Sean, is he's a president at Xerox, been there for 30 plus years. My brother, Chris, is the CEO of a startup, Diamante. My brother, Brian, is a president of one of the largest printing companies in the world. My brother, Dan's a senior salesperson at a Fortune 500 company. And then you have me, the youngest, who's CRO.
Chief Revenue Officer, the top guy, and you've done it twice now, man. I can't wait to talk about all that, because that's like, man, that's the highest level you can reach in sales outside of being like the COO, CEO. So, man, you've done it twice, and it's just so exciting to get into those stories. Now, Suffolk County, is that considered Long Island, obviously. Talk to us about the wrestling tradition out there.
So I was extremely fortunate. We grew up in an area where, you know, Long Island, I think people think lacrosse, and they should, because it's a great lacrosse, essentially a farm system. But it's also wrestling. Section 11 Long Island is amongst the best, and I think to this day, and New York's now a very highly, and always was a highly competitive state in the sport of wrestling. But you didn't have to go far growing up to hit a wrestling club. Vito's dad had a wrestling club in Nassau County. We as a family had one called Blue Wave, the way we had participated in. That was absolutely phenomenal. So you didn't have to go far to really get a grind in, right? To sharpen iron, either from a tournament perspective or hit the local clubs.
I love how New Yorkers, they talk about sections. It's I just had Frank Papalizio on. He's talking about this section, that section. And back in the heyday, you had to win the section to go to state. That was it.
You got it. So when I was, counties were sections as you went to state. But yeah, I was a junior year, and I remember losing 9-7 to a three-time state champ in the county finals. And he went on to compete in states, and he won it. And nobody else did, right? Because they only took the top guy, and there was only one state tournament. So it was. I think it's changed now. Maybe they have a large school, small school. But man, it was a grind.
I mean, that's just so crazy because, you know, I'm sitting here in the city of Chicago, but, you know, grew up in the farm country. But, you know, growing up, some of these like suburb sectionals in Chicago, you'd have the top three guys in the state in one sectional. And luckily in Illinois, top three win at the time. But you think about you guys having one guy go, that's almost too tough, man. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm probably thankful. And I'm sure the people in New York now, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina now, but the people in New York are probably thankful that they're sending multiple, because anything can happen when you get the states, right? It's funny, when I was growing up, it was all about winning counties because the intensity, and it was the top county most years.
Yeah.
So it was all about winning counties. So when I won counties my senior year, now I'm in states. I didn't even think about states. It was like, holy cow, now I'm here. Now what?
Seriously.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Wow.
I wish I had the exposure my junior year. But I finished second. I lost in the finals. Humbling experience. But, I think everybody could probably remember their last match in high school pretty vividly.
What was it like when you finally won the counties? What was that feeling like?
It gives me the chills now. It's a special feeling because it's a culmination of all the hard work, the people that support you. I was fortunate to have the best coaches. And so is my son. So we've had nothing but a good experience. And then when you finally do it, it's kind of, you see the people before you and they're running into their coach's arms, they're celebrating. You're not prepared, but the excitement, and I was fortunate to have my entire family there. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Now, when you're growing up in Long Island, do you feel like you're in the city, or is it farther enough away to like, you know what, is it like one of the same of Manhattan, or is it way different and you feel like you're kind of in like a different world?
So I think there's the up to high school years where you're literally on an island, right? That's what you know. And Long Island's a great place to grow up. And then when you graduate, you know, I went to Hofstra University for a year. I transferred to North Carolina State University. And then when I graduated state, I came back, and it's very different because then it's all about Manhattan, especially if you're in business, right? So then it's, hey, where do you live on Long Island? And people to give you the proximity to the city, right? And they tell you how long their commute is and things like that. So after, I would say, college, as you get into the business world, it's all about Manhattan.
And when you think about growing up and how different, you know, youth sports is now with parents' involvement and all of that, I mean, how involved was your dad in your practices and stuff? Or was it kind of just he was there to support? And like, how did you see that change, that dynamic change?
Man, my dad was on a mission business-wise, and he sent, you know, five of us to college, and we didn't have much student loans, and he just grinded, right? So I was fortunate to have phenomenal older brothers, right, who I'm still very, very close to this day. And each one of them were intimately involved in my athletic career, right? Especially in wrestling, because they had some expertise in the area, right? And they loved to beat up on the youngest brother. But they were all there with me every step of the journey. I remember my mother was phenomenal. She stepped in. She sent me to Jay Robinson. I know Jay Robinson's not around today, but it was one of the best camps I ever went to. And really, I would point to as an inflection point on, if I were to point out where I really defined my next level view of hard work, it was at Jay Robinson. And I was fortunate to have my mom. I remember she was working, and she was literally, I think she was stealing from our food money saving for me to go to J-Rob. Wow. And she ended up sending me there, and it changed everything when I came back.
I did not know you went to that camp. That's awesome, because that is such a legendary camp, and so many guests have talked about it. So when you went, where was it held?
I went twice. I went to in Dinkytown, Minnesota, so University of Minnesota. I went to the 28-day intensive camp, and that was absolutely phenomenal. That was the first time I went.
How old were
and
you?
And then the next, 16.
Wow. Yep. Oh man, yeah. that's like a that's like a crossing of the chasm a little bit, right? Like you're going off, and that could be scary. 28 days of that. I mean, what was that? What were you guys doing then? Waking up, running, just crazy stuff, or what?
Dude, everything about that camp was crazy, from sleep deprivation to intensity to, you know, it's your first time leaving New York. You're traveling by yourself. They pick you up. You go right to a track and they time you on your mile. And you're just like, I'm going to show them how fast I can go. So everybody's running their hardest. But what you don't know, if it's your first time, is they're literally putting you in pools after that. So if you're not a runner, and I wasn't a runner, and you're just giving it your all of a sudden you're going to find yourself with the most elite pool every day doing conditioning. So you learn maybe the next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, everything about it was, now I remember everything is awesome. Then, and you know, Jay's phenomenal. He had you take literally every day you had to write down like a diary and set your goals. And I have it, right? I showed my kids it last year. We broke it out. And, you know, from a 16-year-old's perspective, every day you're literally counting the days down and Wow. You get very little sleep and you grind, and conditioning is very high. That's the whole point, is to you know, essentially mental toughness, I think, through competition, through conditioning, a little bit of sleep deprivation, some nutrition. But what a phenomenal experience. When you get that T-shirt, it's just a T-shirt. All it says is I did it, right?
Yep.
But when you get that T-shirt, it means at the absolute world, because it represents 28 days of an absolute grind.
Kids will never, wrestlers now, and I'm not even that old, but I feel like old saying that, but you'll never understand. Like when you saw that at a tournament, you would see that shirt and you'd be like, ah, man, that dude's tough, you know, like in almost a little crazy to be able to do that. I mean, 28 days, just imagine now. I mean, that's crazy. But it's cool how, like, as physically hard as it was and brutal, like he did stuff like the journaling. I didn't know he had you guys journaling. That's pretty cool.
Journal, meditation. I remember sitting on the mats. There were a sea of us, and he would do, you know, literally meditation where you envision your goals. You envision how to calm your mind before a match. Kind of what the wrestling mindset guys are doing now, which I love, by the way.
They're very awesome. Much
yeah, exactly. And then the T-shirt. Go back to the T-shirt. I wore that when I warm up for, you know, the county tournament, for the state tournament, because it clearly sends a message that I don't know if I'm going to win or lose, but boy, is this thing going to be a grind. We're going to find out.
100%. And on the wrestling mindset, I was just talking to my buddy, Riley Peterkin, who helps me with the documentaries, my creative partner. And I was like, man, that's a service that I needed as a kid. And I might even need it now in life. I mean, like, that is just those. And I know their words getting spread about how awesome wrestling mindset is, but man, like what an amazing program they put together.
Yeah. They filled a big gap, very much needed. And I was kidding around a couple of weeks ago. I was like, some wrestling parents probably need it more than the actual kids, right?
To 100%. Yeah.
Have a better lens on it, but we're thankful for those guys. You know what? You know, Liam took a first recruiting trip, my son. And what amazed me was that they actually offer that. D1 programs, they offer that sort of training, that mental training.
Sports psychology, yeah.
Sports psychology, yeah. So they have the academic services, which is a great resource. But then they also have sports psychology, which is awesome too to see.
Wow, yeah. No, that's it makes sense. I mean, you hear, I think Bo Nickel went on the Jocko podcast and he got really in the weeds about the Penn State program, and they have this, I can't remember her name, but she's like the whisperer, you know, and she's like the sports psychologist master, and it really helps, you know. And it's such a, you listen to these interviews now, the guys after the Big Tens versus 30 years ago. And I think Adam Terrapelli called it out on Twitter, right? It was like back when the brands were wrestling, it was like, win you live, lose you die. If you lost, it was like a death, right? And now it's almost the exact opposite. All the Penn State guys are like, it's just a game. It doesn't matter. So like you see this like mental warfare going on, and the approach now of the Penn State guys is, it's it sounds like it's more freeing, right? There's not so much pressure on you. Like, if you think losing a match, it's the equivalent of dying, you're going to be a lot more tight. Whereas now these guys are like, oh, it's just a game. Let's go out there and score as many points as we can. And you kind of see that reflected in the styles.
I agree. It's funny. You know, I when I wrestled for Hofstra, my coach was Tommy Ryan, who obviously coached Ohio State. So I was very fortunate to wrestle for Tommy for a year. And we had the Brands come in. And that Iowa style intensity, and I had the Brands poster in my room growing up, right? We idolized those guys, but it was all about exactly what you just said, right? It was about winning. It was about conditioning. It was about being convinced you're the hardest worker in the room and losing's not a possibility. And I think we've, you know, those things are important, but I think we've evolved to your point. Yeah. I think that Penn State approach can not only in wrestling, but also in business. Right, is the journey, the learnings are often through our losses and our setbacks and how quickly we can reset, learn, get better, iterate, and set a higher bar is the important thing.
I got to imagine back in the early days at EMC, there was none of this. It's just a game. It's life and death. You know, and so you probably had to soften yourself up a little bit to deal with some of these new recruits coming out, man.
Yeah, EMC, for those that aren't aware, was one of the largest IT companies prior to an acquisition from Dell Technologies. And I entered in EMC in 2005 from a wrestler, by the way. A buddy of mine was a wrestler at Brown and wrestled for my high school, Half Hollow Hills East. And he was one of my best friends. And I remember being at some small startup early in my career doing inside sales. And he's like, look, you're at like D3. You need to come into D1. Right. EMC was considered the elite grind. They started from college hockey players, I think, out of Boston College. And you just knew that you were going to be exposed early on, but it was going to be worth the journey, because if you can compete at that level, you can compete anywhere.
I couldn't agree more. My introduction to EMC, my mentor that got me into sales, I was going to go to law school, took the LSAT, bombed it, retook the LSAT, did okay. But I just like, man, I'm not going to be a doctor. I'm not going to be an engineer. I can't do math. So I'm like, I better be a lawyer. And thank God for this guy. He's like, man, you should go into sales. And he started at EMC right out of Tufts. And this was like early 90s. And he would tell these incredible stories of like, they would just take all these college athletes, put them in a training, and then they'd send you out in the field. And like, it was like survive or die. Like you had a patch. And back then, to get past receptionists, these guys were like waiting for the receptionist to go to the bathroom. They'd sneak in the office. I mean, I heard these stories about how epic this culture was. And I never worked at EMC directly, but he got me into a company that was started by former EMC guys. But so that, to your point, exactly, it is the D1s. It's the ultimate pressure cooker. And if you make it through there, you know, you'll make it forever kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. We lived it. One of the things I would describe about, you know, our aspiration, we talk a lot about culture. And startup, it's a little bit easier to define the culture of a company versus just a small team. But one of the big things I walked away on the EMC experience was never let anyone down, right? And it seems simple, but never let a customer down. You were on call at midnight, you know, Christmas, I'm being dramatic, but anytime, you were always there to serve the customer, even as the sales guy, especially as the sales guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, EMC infrastructure was considered critical. But if something happened from a support service perspective, what we used to say is you run into the fire, right? You don't run away from it. You run right into it and you exceed the expectations of the customer. And that's where real relationships are established.
You're spot on. Even when it's like they're cussing about support, the data center's offline, it's 2 a.m. Yep. That run to the fire is something I've heard. It really does stick out. And like you, to your point, they may be pissed at first, but as soon as you get on there, then you really get to know these guys, right? And then you start to build relationships with them. So that's, I love that mentality. And it's kind of contrary to what you would normally think, right? You think, that sounds noisy. I'm going to put that away. Hope it goes away. But if you're not there, someone else is.
You got it. You know, you think about sales, you make a lot of commitments and promises prior to the PO. And really your opportunity to develop a next level relationship is coming through. And the world is evolving that way with customer success and the focus on, especially in the SaaS world, in the ARR world, you really align to exceeding customer expectations. And then that's defined in your NRR. Other.
And if not, they don't renew. It's not like that perpetual license, right? It's way different.
Exactly. You got it.
So let's go back to your first experience of Tom Ryan, because you're not going to meet a bigger Tom Ryan fanboy than me. Like, I'm obsessed with Tom Ryan. He's been on the show multiple times. I love everything about his journey, from him going to Syracuse to follow his brother. Then he leaves a scholarship, goes to Iowa, drives his car across the country. I mean, just a legend. And, you know, he's a New Yorker, obviously. So talk to us about how you ended up at Hofstra and your first experience meeting Coach Ryan.
So he grew up in Wantagh, Long Island, right? So he's probably, I mean, there's Kerry McCord. There's a handful of people that are just next level, represent the sport really well. I'm gone on to be great coaches and great leaders and so on. And Tom Ryan's one of them. And I met him my senior year. I remember going out to lunch with him, and we hit it off immediately. Outside of just the mutual Long Island commonality, also had the same lens on work ethic. And we talked a lot about Jay Robinson, by the way.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, debating, because I think there was some history. I don't know every detail of the history, but I think Jay Rob started inside Iowa, kind of broke off at some point. So we were debating a little bit, probably that journey in terms of the Iowa campus versus Jay Rob. But the reality is they had a lot in common, and Tommy knew that. Now, Tommy, it was his first year at Hofstra. So it was a startup, Ryan.
Yeah.
Right. And the ultimate startup. He's coming in, and you know, Hofstra definitely had a history with Gallo and some others, but Tommy was ready to take it to another level. So we saw our team coming in that year, which was 1996, as the startup, the foundation of the team. And so when I joined, it was all about, we're going to build this thing together and iterate. And he went on to do great things. I eventually left after the first year to transfer down to North Carolina State University. But I love Tommy. I love his book, Chosen Suffering. I recommend it to anybody that will listen. I think there's a lot of great life learnings that can be applied not only to wrestling, but careers and so on.
That's a guy who could have crushed in business, don't you think?
Oh my God. No doubt, for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, it's like you meet some of those people and you're just like, oh my, there's a guy in Chicago here who runs, he's done a phenomenal job with Beat the Street Chicago. He's the executive director, but his whole life he was a high school coach. But just seeing how he runs this enterprise here in Chicago, it's now the largest wrestling organization in Illinois, and they're crushing.
Wow.
They fundraise for a standalone facility. But he's that same way. Like, you meet this guy and you're like, man, you would have been a VP of sales. Killed it, you know. So it's not every day we see that, but man, when you do, it's very special. And you talked about Gallo, man. That's another legend. I'll have to, in the show notes, I'll post when he's been on, but I forgot that he's Hofstra's only national champ. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yep,
yeah, in the 70s.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you know, you go to college, and like a lot of us, right? Most of us are not going to be national champs. Most of us aren't even going to be wrestling at the big dance that we're watching right now. But it was still so fundamental to your fiber, to your being, that everything you post on LinkedIn is there's like a wrestling tag bag. I can see it. So talk to us a little bit about your career journey. So you started out at this company that you consider the D3s. What were some growing pains? And then when you did make the leap to EMC, did you have any self-doubts? I mean, talk to us about kind of like 22 to like until when you made it kind of thing in the business world.
So I graduate state, and you know, in my mind, I'm staying in Raleigh. Raleigh's like this wonderful, beautiful area, outdoors, green, weather's great. It's a little bit of a tech hub, right? With RTP. So I'm sitting there, I'm going to be the black sheep of the family. I'm going to be the only one not to move back to Long Island, where all my brothers were spent every Sunday watching Giant games together. And I'm going to say, no, I'm going to stay down here. And it was, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks after I graduated. And I ended up driving, I'm going to date myself here, but I'm driving in a parking lot and I drop a CD on the passenger side. I bend down and I hit a pole, total my car, got blood all over me. Long story short is 2 weeks later, I'm without choice, I'm going back to Long Island, New York.
So what happened between then and that?
It was, you can't get anywhere. I wasn't going to be able to get to work without a car, and nobody was going to buy me a car. It was like a survival thing. I had to go back. My parents were like, oh, okay. So I go back, and in my mind, now I got a fire in the belly, right? So I graduated with a communications degree. So from a sale, our family knew we were going into sales, right? And we knew the things that we were learning on the journey of wrestling that can be applied and will be applied with success. So I didn't want to go get a job working with one of my brothers. At the time, my brother Chris was at Computer Associates at a senior level. On Long Island. I landed in New York. And, you know, he was like, hey, come work here. And I'm like, competitor in me is not going to have it. So I literally go through the Long Island Newsday. Back then, that was the best source of job listings. And I find a tech company kind of in Nassau County, which is about a half hour outside Manhattan. And they competed with Computer Associates. So I'm like, man, I get to compete against my brother. It's the best thing in the world. So, and I go in as entry-level position inside sales. And that was a little bit more like a boiler room. That was a kind of Wolf of Wall Street, as people envision things. Like, read this script. If you get somebody on the line, you hand it to somebody else. And I just gave it everything. And that was, you know, 2 years in, that buddy of mine from EMC gives me a call. And he's like, got to come over here. So when you say, did I feel vulnerable or reluctant? Yes and yes. There's no doubt. You go from competing at a smaller level to going into one of the largest, most prestigious technology companies in the world. You definitely feel vulnerable, right? You didn't have their training. I knew I was coming from good lineage, but these guys were ready to compete. So you go in and in the first couple of months, you're trying to figure things out and you're trying to do everything by work ethic and example and keep your head down. And then ultimately you have some success and you start to get that iron sharpens iron. This isn't about me versus the world. This is about something that's an evolution of that. And I think EMC had ultimately the greatest balance of I'm going to compete against you. But boy, if we're competing against HP or Pure Storage or IBM at the time, Hitachi, we're going to be more powerful together and let's go take on the world together.
Yeah. And I love how you, you know, as you're saying that, it kind of reminds me of in a weird way, right? Like probably synonymous when Coach Ryan left Syracuse, he's the man, his older brother's there. He goes to Iowa. He talks about his first workout was with the Steiner twins and he couldn't even move his arms after. Right. And so it's like, he's like, what the hell did I just give up? And then, you know, I don't know if it was that dramatic for you, but you get there. And I think anyone who's been kind of like when I went to Salesforce for the first time from a very small company, you're like, man, I don't know if I belong here. Right. This is like, this is for the smart people. This isn't for me. And I got to imagine it's similar for you because it's, you know, it's a tough job, right? You're going to, the first 2 years are the worst. You're calling hundreds of calls. No one wants to talk to you. You know, you don't get the relationships that you have and, you know, you're taking people out to lunch until later on. Right. So, what was it like for you, though? Was it hard to go from individual contributor to now you're managing a team, now you're a coach?
So that was an awesome transition. I say awesome because I look back at my first leadership job is really when I hired the team I'm with today. So I've been with the team for, you know, 15 years plus. The job, of course, was in Manhattan. And here's how I thought of it, Ryan. I thought that I was just named the captain of the wrestling team. You know, it wasn't going to be kind of lead by, it was going to be in the trenches. And, I hired athletes. EMC does. We still, definitely have a bias towards athletes today. And I did everything that you would expect. I leaderboard everything. It was all about metrics. I was all about learning and development, enablement and leading, putting people on the spot and, you know, true iron sharpens iron. We all believed we were the men and women in the arena. Yeah. Just, you know, the journey would matter. I prioritize people's careers, develop the rapport to understand that it's not just about business. Business is personal and the best leaders make it personal. And we took over a great business. We had just acquired a company called Data Domain. And that was my first leadership job. Data Domain came in with phenomenal culture and a fast, fast growing business on the back of great technology. So it was like the perfect first leadership job. And I think we did about 7 million and we brought that business to 70 million inside 3 years. And it was a top, there was 26 teams globally. And we were the number two team pretty consistently, if not number one. So it was a great timing, everything that you say, you want the best timing, you want to get a little bit lucky and you want great people with great technology. And I kind of had it all in my first leadership role.
And what did you mean by saying like, you're still with those guys now, like the people you recruited, are they still working with you at your current place?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, like we've been through Rob Sexton, Eric Amstutz, Kristen Steele. There's a bunch of people that We went from EMC, took a shot on a startup called CloudGenics, had an exit, went to Palo Alto Networks, and then are with me today at security as well. And I hope to spend a career with them.
Wow. That's amazing that you are that kind of leader, that you've built these relationships that they're still with you. Because a lot of times you'll see leaders are all about themselves and it's getting that next promotion. And as soon as they're gone, you know, and that's very common. So, and I got to imagine you as a leader, you're not someone who's sitting back, you're on the calls with them. So like, what's a day in the life like when you're managing the team?
So training and enablement, like the self grind, we believe in, right? So you'll hear a lot of role playing, right? A lot of pride in the messaging, a lot of sales process structure, execution, a lot of recognition, right? We love it. Actually, you know what? You mentioned Frank Papalizio. I think they were the first in Journeyman to give out those big wood hammers as trophies, the Thor hammers. We do that on our team as recognition. So we contacted that company. It's a small company in upstate New York, custom woodwork. They're beautiful. And that's how we recognize the team, right? We give them what we call Rudis swords, which are swords, trophies used to be given to gladiators. And we recognize in a really big way for the things that take the grind, high activity, building pipeline, being a great teammate, not just outcomes, not just MVP awards because the right salesperson was at the right deal at the right time.
Right.
So that's really our team. The best part of traveling is or spending, you know, a career with the same team is trust. You know, Rob reports to me, you might think some days he's the CRO, because that's the kind of trust we have. And when you have that, it's just like a big weight. There's no politics. You can develop a great culture, and you can execute with predictability on a common playbook. So we have that. And we hope to have that, throughout our careers.
It's funny. As soon as you said hammer, I'm thinking Cameron Haynes, but, do you know who that is? You into him? He's like this. Cameron Haynes is this ultra marathon runner. He runs like 240 mile races. He's a professional bow hunter, and like he's sponsored by Under Armour. But his whole thing is keep hammering, and he's like a nut. Like he'll get up at four, run 12 miles on his lunch. He still has a job. He works at this city electric company in Oregon, but he's always just grinding, and his thing is keep hammering. So, but no, it's cool that you reward stuff like that, because I think about, you know, the common thing is when I was coming up, you know, we had the bell in the office and you'd ring the bell. Yep. One ring was 10K of a closed deal, right? So you're up there and sometimes you got 70 rings on it and people are like, when's this guy going to stop? You know, so that's exciting. That's fun. But like to your point, a lot of the other stuff goes unnoticed. So you're big on the recognition. I like that.
We are. And we don't have a bell. We have a gong, and we are in the office every day, most days when we're not traveling. So very much an in-office culture. And I think you have to be. And we have that farm system. You know, when I left EMC, I went to a company called CloudGenics, which was an early stage startup. I was the 42nd employee. And that's kind of where I disrupted my life, right? Just, I was at a higher level at EMC. We were getting acquired by Dell Technologies, making really good money. And all of a sudden I got this bug to go to a startup, which is hard to do at that point in your career.
Yeah, right? Let's just pause because you could have easily been at EMC for another 10 years, retired, live in New York, done. And so you decide to move your whole family to Raleigh. Yeah, it's like talk us through this conversation now with your family. Like, what are you thinking in your head, and why did you want to even explore a startup?
So my last role at EMC was with a business unit called like Extreme.io, and it was this new business unit, an acquisition that we made, and the product started at zero. So it felt like a startup, right? Because we had support service issues, we're building processes, we're part of EMC, have the resources. And then we're competing against what it seemed to me like there was an explosion of startup competitors, Pure Storage, SolidFire, all these little competitors that were further out than EMC in terms of the maturation of their technology. And we were literally, it was David and Goliath, and we were Goliath, Ryan, right? And at some point I'm like, man, I make so much better of a David than I do a Goliath. I want to get to the other side. I want to go disrupt somebody else. So as soon as I got that idea in my head, you couldn't hold me back. I remember leaving EMC saying they could have given me the CEO job with tens of millions of dollars, and there was zero chance that I wouldn't take the shot. I found a startup in the networking space. I love that because Cisco was the Goliath in the networking space. And I said, man, this could be a really cool opportunity to go disrupt a giant and start at zero, which is the best place to establish a culture of a company.
Mm-hmm.
So along with that, I'm like, okay, I found CloudGenix was the company, phenomenal leadership and founder Kumar Ramachandran. And in order to mitigate risk on this, you know, 9 out of 10 startups fail and all that's true. I'm like, I'm going to have to really commit to this thing. And commitment to me meant moving my family. We moved within 30 days, sold my house. I had a daughter going into high school, I had a son that we were going to, you know, the wrestling thing and the clubs, and my son Gavin was getting involved with wrestling. And now I literally moved my family from Long Island to Raleigh. Why? Literally because of the reasons that we just spoke about. The opportunity here to develop a farm system like EMC had in Franklin, Massachusetts, and recruit from Duke, UNC, NC State, East Carolina, you know, Greensboro, just to get athletes or at least people with athletic mentalities.
Yeah.
Right. Which is self-development, be a great teammate, understand that losses bring learnings. We win as a team, so on and so forth. That was going to be our play. We set up our office in downtown Raleigh and we started hiring. Actually, one of our early interns was Mike Machiavello.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who's former now, podcast guest. Legend. Yeah. Wow.
Legend is right. Yeah. He's a great friend of our family. And, you know, I remember when we hired him as an intern, I was blown away. This kid could do anything. Obviously, he's a phenomenal wrestler and he's continuing the journey. But if he ever went to business, he'd dominate there. He gave a presentation at the end of our internship and Pop was there. Adam was there. And I forget one of the other coaches at the time. It was before Tommy, but they were all in the room as Mock was doing his presentation, which was a lot of pressure. You had our whole company and his coaching staff there delivering his end presentation, and he absolutely crushed.
The coaches came? So like,
yeah.
What?
Full sport, class acts.
Wow.
100%.
That's amazing. So because when you say, you know, I just wrote it down, like you're like, for me to succeed at CloudGenix, I have to go all in. And I was hoping you'd go into it because I know how intense and how crazy you are. So for you, that's got to be like this high bar. Like, I'm sure the company didn't. You probably could have stayed in New York if you wanted, right, and been a remote CRO. But you said 100%. I got to get there. Yeah. So, wow. And so, what's the first thing you said when you talked to the family about it?
So I don't want to make it. It wasn't a light switch because I did. I'm a data driven guy, right? So think of spreadsheets and risk analysis and modeling, right. I don't, you do the emotional part comes after that. So, my wife, Lisa, the 20 years, extremely supportive, was, you know, prior to that, we always dreamed of moving to North Carolina because it's a great place for a lot of reasons. And it just felt like the right time. Let's do it. My daughter was a big part of our decision. I remember sitting at, just outside of NC State's campus with her. She started to look at high schools at that point, right?
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful day, Carolina blue skies. Mm. Everything went right in that moment for that sales meeting that I had with my daughter, where we got it. We committed in the moment, found a great school for her down here, and we were off and running. So we're very fortunate to have the family support.
That's amazing. And I'm sitting here in Chicago right now. It just snowed this morning, by the way, and it tempted us with a very nice February. So we actually did some golfing in February, and now here it is. We were talking a couple of weeks ago. Is it going to get cold again? And of course, we're fooled and it's snowing. So you can't put a premium on how beautiful North Carolina is. And I tell that whenever I have some of the NC State guys on or even Coach Cole from UNC, it's like that's such a recruiting advantage because, you know, a lot of the Hammers are from Illinois, Iowa, Ohio, PA, and it's just miserable. There's no other way to put it, man. You get mountains, you get hiking. Wow.
You know, North Carolina is fortunate from a wrestling perspective to have so many D1 programs too.
Seriously. Yeah.
Right. You got App State, you got Davidson, Gardner Webb, Duke, UNC, NC State. So
is Campbell UNC, NC too, or no?
Campbell, 100% Campbell as well. And they're doing phenomenal. They're having a great tournament so far. It has a lot to offer. Why wouldn't you want to come to, I think Cole's on like a podcast somewhere saying, why wouldn't you want to come to North Carolina? And
yeah.
I believe that. And we spend a lot of time focused on building the youth program now here with our local club in Raleigh. And I think Pat's done great. Obviously Pat's a legend and he's done great things building NC State's program to be consistently a top 10.
Oh, He almost reminds me of you a little bit. He first started out at Bucknell, right? And then yep. made the jump and built his franchise. And I mean, that's a first ballot Hall of Famer, bar none. I mean, he's unbelievable. I want to get into a little bit of two things before we sign off. One, yep. parenting and parenting a wrestler. But I want to start with this one. You know, you do a lot of hiring, right? So just to fast forward, so you went to CloudGenics, super successful. You know, as you mentioned, they were acquired by Palo Alto Networks, big exit. That's a party. That's winning the national tournament. If you can do that, it's so rare. It's just, almost never happens. So you win the national tournament there. You're at Palo for a year and a half, want to get back to a smaller company. And now you're at, is it Security.ai?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Security AI. Yep.
Security AI. So, and now you're doing kind of that same playbook and you're big on in the office. Let's talk a little bit about what you're seeing with this culture. Like, what do you look for when you're hiring? What's a red flag to you? Because a lot of people listening are in that job market. They're looking, you know. So what are you seeing on that front?
So, you know, it's funny. We're about 6 months into security and we sat in and we were hiring and we were hiring quickly. And the right hire can make all the difference in the world, and the wrong hire can dramatically impact things as well, right? Especially in sales as you ramp and so on and so forth. And I think what we did, this effort was by Eric Amstutz, fellow wrestler. He said, let's get in a room and figure out what great looks like for us, right? Because a great hire at EMC might not be a great hire at CloudGenics, which we learned, might not be a great hire in the security industry at Secure. So here's what we did. We got in a room and we said, fundamentally, what are our A players look like? And we literally wrote it down and we came up with an acronym, kind of stealing from, for those sales listeners out there, the MedPick. We came up with GoPick. And GoPick for us was our A players, first and foremost, have grit, right? And they take ownership. They're accountable, right? And they're performers. They have a history of performing. They have strong IQ and EQ. They're extremely coachable and they're curious, right? And those are buzzwords. So now you got to get a level deeper. Well, what do you mean by grit? Well, they may come from this profile, this startup where they had to start with nothing and build a business rather than a big company. Or they came from the athletic world, right? Where they had to win and grind and do all those things. And then we learned, okay, what questions can we ask in an interview to bring out whether you really have that grit and so on and so forth. So we literally created a science out of recruiting and interviewing to ensure that those that did make it through were a cultural match. Mm-hmm. That's outside of the things that you layer on top, which are, hey, what's your sales skill set? How do you build pipeline and generate pipeline? What are your conversion rates? Are you a science, a seller, a champion builder? That was secondary to ensuring that there was a cultural match when we looked for new employees.
Wow. And that's the big thing that comes through when I hear that coachable and taking it a layer deeper. The ability to take feedback, it is really, that's something that's gone away. Like, people are so sensitive now. And like, and I hear it even on, you know, other calls I'm on. And it's just like, if you've done athletics, or it doesn't have to be athletics, but you can take feedback, right? You can take coaching and not take it personal. It's not a hit on your person. They're just trying to get you better. That's something that you guys probably see a lot of. It's like, people who don't have that, it's very tough to work with those people because they're taking everything so personal.
Personal, and it becomes their world rather than our world, right? And there are a lot of great salespeople that are maybe better at a different culture than ours. We're very much a team atmosphere, right? Yeah. Iron sharpens iron, which I probably said four times on this call, is part of our culture. That whole man, woman in the arena thing, we very much believe in, which means it's a go-giver culture. There's a book out there called Go-Giver, and everyone has to read it before they join our team. Meaning you signed, your prerequisite to coming on board is to read the Go-Giver. It's an easy read. Everyone should read it. But it boils down to this: in sales or in life, be the first to give, meaning provide value first, exceed expectations on giving, and don't expect reciprocation, right? Don't do it because you want something back. And that's also a great teammate. That's a great, in anything, in sports, but especially in work, is the selflessness. And that's what we're looking to hire and build a great culture on.
It's interesting because when I hear that, you almost, to me, I think about like the top A players almost got to be very selfish. And It's interesting that you want both though, right? Because that's why I just love I love sales, because it reminds me of a team, right? As a wrestler, I wanted my team to win, but if I won, I was good. I probably didn't have enough of that team player in me. And it's kind of similar now, right? Like you want people who care about the whole of the picture versus just themselves. So that's a fine balance, right? To find that selfless, but also selfish enough to be able to, like, you know what I mean? Like, we've had that mentality in wrestling, you got to be selfish. I don't know how true that is.
Dude, I think you hit it head on, though. It's the dual meet, right? It's a dual meet. And we just came off of I-64 in Virginia and back competing with Raw, who's our wrestling club.
Yeah.
And these are elite kids, and they're sitting there screaming for each other, supporting each other, like you wouldn't believe, right? That's what's so special about dual meets, because it's about my contribution to the team. And sometimes that contribution could mean don't get pinned because right. You're wrestling some All-American somewhere. So right. Every match matters. Your contribution matters, supporting. And that's the same in sales. Yes, I want to succeed. I want whatever my monetary, financial, career goals are. But I also know that rising tides raise all boats, and that we're all going to do really good things when we could all succeed. For the club, which we just talked about with Casey Gesha and Brandon Palmer and Colton Palmer, they're our partners. It's about, you know, how do you transform from a wrestling club to a program?
Mm-hmm.
M2. Others, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
That means everyone has to contribute not only to their own goals, but to the goals of the club. And that's a transition that will bring you to a program, ultimately, and raise every club in the state to a different level.
So the club that you guys are working with is called RAW, Raleigh Area Wrestling Club?
Raleigh Area Wrestling Club. 3 or 4 years old, kind of born in COVID, had 43 state qualifiers, I think 33 state placers, 11 state champions this year. Very proud of what we're building around.
That's awesome. Actually, one of the guys I've done a documentary on lives in Raleigh. His name's Tony Davis. He's an NCAA champion for UNI. Do you know Tony? Have you run across him yet?
We've brought him in for clinics and such. He's big personality, great leader, great with the kids. We love Tony.
Kids love Tony Davis. Yeah, he is so fun. And you talk about an Illinois legend. I say that term every podcast, but first five-time kids state champ, high school, had a little bit of a bumpy road in high school, but did win a state title. And then, you know, you and I beats, the year before, we're actually about to see it this year. So at 165 this year, we got Messenbrink and O'Toole, went to the same high school. They might meet the finals.
Yep.
Tony Davis is junior year. He wrestles TJ Williams in the finals, Hawkeye legend, high school teammate, beats him. And the following year, Tony beats Terrapelli in the finals. But, yeah, what a guy. I'm glad you have crossed paths with him, because he's amazing.
Yeah, he's good for the state of North Carolina wrestling. There's no doubt about it.
Now you talk about you have a kid who wrestled, son just won a state title as a junior in high school, which is an amazing accomplishment. What advice would you give to parents whose kids are just starting? You know, because we've seen the worst of it in wrestling. We've seen some parents do it really well. Like, what have you learned along the journey as being a parent whose kid is in wrestling?
You know, I don't want to seem cliche. My view is the same in business as well as in wrestling. And it's probably that way because of wrestling. Is it really is about the journey, especially when the kids are younger. I think every kid should wrestle, male, female. I don't care who you are. I think you should wrestle or do something hard,
mm-hmm.
Right? And embrace hard things and grind and commit to something. And even if it doesn't come natural or great, but I think that's important, a part of life, delayed gratification. What I put in is what I get out, that sort of thing. So, you know, if I were to guide parents, I'd say, you know, start early. Multi-sport early on is a really good thing, mm-hmm. right? Find your path. Join a great club. Most importantly, have great leaders. And I started this podcast sharing that I've always had great leaders in the sport of wrestling around me. My son is very fortunate. And, you know, we look at our leaders in our club, they're so committed to each individual and so personal for them that it's easy to reciprocate the commitment, right? And then at some point you'll be in high school and you'll figure things out and, you know, you zero in on, you know, competing outside the state and getting exposure and all those things. But it's all about the journey. And the grind that happens in the process, that those lessons you take to life,
mm-hmm.
right? To business, to being the best teacher in the world, to giving back and all those things.
Yeah, I love that. And I want to wind down with some more rapid fire question. So you mentioned one of the books you recommend or mandate is The Go-Giver. What other books do you really like or have had a big impact on you?
Tommy's book is great. You know, if there's two books I'd give to recommend to anybody, Chosen Suffering is you know, comes from a very personal and deep place. And it definitely is a great read. And then The Go-Giver is for everything culture, right? The great human beings make great professionals. I'd say those two books are definitely top of mind from a cultural perspective.
I love it. And when you think about, you know, you've had a very successful career, and, you know, I always like to ask people who've had that kind of path, you know, what's something you think you did better than anyone else? Like, whether it's as a leader or as an individual contributor, like for example, I love to think that no one's doing a better planning session on Sunday than me. Every Sunday I take an hour, I plan my whole week out. What are my workouts going to do? What are my meetings going to look like? And I know some people do that, but I don't miss on that. Like, that's something I really think no one's doing the Sunday planning session better than me. What do you like to think you did that's really enabled you to have success?
So I probably inherited it from watching my older brothers, but embracing hard things as a way of life.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, I do that naturally. It almost has to be hard to be great. And I think that mentality, and that's perfect, by the way, for a startup, right? Where everything's hard every other day and something's always breaking. But embracing adversity and seeing it as an opportunity to grow, I wish that for my kids and everyone around me. You know, we're living in a world in AI, in the tech world, and no bigger company than NVIDIA. And they had a conference last week, and Jensen, the CEO, was on stage doing a phenomenal job. But there was a video out there that I shared on LinkedIn where he's literally on stage talking to Stanford kids, saying, you guys have a very high bar and you should. You got a great education, so on and so forth. But he's wishing them pain and suffering, Ryan.
Yeah.
Because that is the path to real growth. And I think just that mentality, when he asked that question, that would be the one thing that I would point to.
That was one of the notes I wrote down. I went to your LinkedIn, I saw that, because to your point, NVIDIA, you can't read an article without seeing NVIDIA now, and it's just everywhere. But yeah, the one thing that he said that was interesting, he goes, people with high expectations, you know, the Stanford graduates, a lot of times they'll have low resiliency, which I was like, that's interesting. And you almost would think intuitively it's the opposite. But he goes, you know, so you got to have high resiliency to succeed, obviously. And so, yeah, he goes, I hope suffering happens for you. It's like, wow. I mean, it's
powerful.
It is. It really is. And I mean, I know you're a busy guy. You got a whole company to run here. But, you know, we always sign off with this. You know, the podcast is called Wrestling Changed My Life. We've talked a little bit about it's really kind of shaped your whole life. But, you know, if you're in a business meeting and someone goes, man, why do you let your kids wrestle? Like, what's that about? You know, what would you say to that?
I'd say lessons learned in wrestling can be applied to life, and you could have great success in any area of business or any outcome that you desire. I love what you're doing, Ryan. I love your podcast. I know you're in the tech side too, so it's easy to relate to, but very much appreciate the opportunity to participate today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, man. And for any young kids listening, check out the company. I'm sure they got all kinds of BDR jobs open, and
absolutely.
Love it.
Absolutely.
Man.
Security.ai. Find us.
Security.ai. Thanks, Matt. Have a great day. Folks, thanks for listening to the Wrestling Changed My Life podcast. To support the show, please go to our online store and check out our merch. It's store.wrestlingchangedmylife.com. We have stickers, hoodies, t-shirts. Again, it's store.wrestlingchangedmylife.com. Check out the merch store, and we'll see you next time on Wrestling Changed My Life. Peace!